Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
One of the most extraordinary things about this whole terrible time for the Japanese has been the remarkably calm and stoic way that the people there have reacted to the triple blow of earthquake, tsunami, and now this nuclear situation.
For centuries, Japanese have faced down adversity with stoic resolve.
These are enormously disciplined people. And if God forbid this had to happen anywhere, this is a country that can handle it.
Well, that was a taste of some of the media coverage of the crisis in Japan. And the narrative that's emerged is what you just heard, that the Japanese people have responded with a stoicism that is uniquely Japanese. We hear reports of calm, no looting, no complaining, and orderly lines. And that's all presented in contrast to the looting and chaos in post-earthquake Haiti and post-Katrina New Orleans. And while clearly there are cultural differences, the coverage got us wondering how much of this reported stoicism is culturally specific to Japanese people, and how much of it is a projection of a stereotype. Ian Baruma joins me now to discuss. He's a frequent contributor to the New York Review of Books and is the Henry R. Luce Professor at Bard College. He was educated partly in Japan and has lived there over the years. Ian, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be there.
And listeners, we want to hear from you, especially if you're from Japan or are of Japanese descent. Do you have observations about the media coverage of the recent disaster there? Do you take issue with the reporting and how little looting has taken place, the orderliness of the lines, the stoicism of the people, or the comparisons to Katrina or Haiti? Or do you think it's appropriate and accurate to characterize Japanese people the way you've been telling it? When you hear Rudy Giuliani, for example, say, these are enormously disciplined people, and God forbid if this had to happen anywhere, these are a people that can handle it. Does that make you smile or does that make you cringe? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Ian, this word stoic may be the one that keeps coming up in the coverage with the most regularity, a suggestion, too, that it's a uniquely Japanese response to a tragedy. First of all, do you think that's accurate?
Well, I think it's accurate in the sense that the people seem to have responded in a very disciplined manner. Whether it's unique is another issue. You could the same sort of image existed about the British during the Blitz in World War II and how people queued up in perfect queues and behaved and so on and so forth. I think in both cases you can say that people have been raised and educated from an early age to be disciplined. When one talks about stereotypes or cultural characteristics or these are stoic people, that suggests that this is a kind of essential, unchanging virtue that is always there. That's not the case. These things change. In 1923, when there was a huge earthquake in Tokyo, mobs violently attacked and murdered large numbers of Korean residents who were blamed for poisoning wells and that kind of thing.
Stoicism is a very common response to devastation. It also happens to fit a Japanese stereotype. So on the one hand, you're saying it's how this generation of Japanese has largely been raised. On the other hand, if you point that out in a certain way, it's like saying it's somehow culturally inbred.
Yes, inbred suggests that it's sort of in the blood, and that's, yes, of course, never true. The other thing to be said is that when people are struck with these kind of disasters, they're often too numb and with grief and devastation to react in a chaotic or anarchic way. But it can happen, as I just mentioned, in 1923, there was mob violence.
Are the Japanese media covering their people differently?
I'm not so sure if they're covering their people differently. I think there's probably less being written about national characteristics or anything of that sort. What you do see in the Japanese papers is perhaps even more criticism of the government and of officialdom than you do in the foreign press.
Giuliani in the clip and others lump the Japanese people together. It's a country of 127 million people. Is it that people think of Japan as very ethnically homogeneous, and so therefore it has a uniform culture in a way that we don't here in the U.S.? And, of course, it is a more homogeneous nation than the United States, certainly, and than many countries.
That's certainly true, although the homogeneity can be exaggerated and is frequently exaggerated, not only by observers from abroad, but by Japanese politicians, often of a nationalist bent, who see it as a particular virtue to have a homogeneous or ethnically homogeneous nation. Of course, ethnicity is a very slippery concept, and if you start looking into the DNA of people, you'll find that the Japanese are as mixed as most peoples.
We had Linda Lowen, a Japanese-American journalist, on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about some similar questions, and specifically she was talking about Japanese culture and how the group trumps the individual in general, and that they're a very private culture. And she went on to describe how that affects the media coverage. Here she is responding to a caller.
The Japanese are very, very private. And this is a country in which, you know, if the Fukushima 50 were here in the United States, you'd believe that the wives and the neighbors would be calling every media outlet available to say, hey, interview me, I'll talk about it. And that just doesn't, you know, it doesn't even enter into the mind of a Japanese individual.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, that's something to admire and respect and be proud of.
So, Ian Baruma, I wonder from your point of view, if you agree or disagree with any of that, but do you think that this aversion to commenting publicly in the way we're used to seeing in this country has affected the way our media cover the crisis?
Well, I don't know. I can see the point that was just being made. On the other hand, having worked as a journalist in many parts of Asia and the rest of the world, Japan is also a country that's extraordinarily open in the sense that it's never difficult to get interviews with either public figures or private people. They may not assert themselves quite in the same way that Americans do and sort of clamor for attention, although if you watch Japanese TV, there are plenty of people who do that too. But the idea that it's this sort of impenetrable place where people are wrapped up in their private cocoons and never say anything to outsiders, that would be a complete misconception.
Let's take a phone call. Ronnie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ronnie.
Yes, hi. How are you?
Good, thank you. You've been watching Japanese television, do I understand?
Yeah, I don't understand Japanese, but my wife has been tell me what's been going on.
Your wife is Japanese?
My wife is Japanese, yeah.
Uh-huh. And?
And there were times when, you know, the Japanese news would say something, and then the American news would say something, and we were like, wait a minute, the Japanese news isn't reporting that. And then there would be times when the American news would say something, and then we would call her parents going, do you know that this is going on? And her parents didn't know anything of what was going on. So, you know, we were wondering, it's just like, you know, how can the American media be saying certain things when this is just, you know, brand new and, you know, they're not there, you know?
Ian, you want to talk to Ronnie?
Well, it's a bit difficult for me to respond to that without knowing what it is that was or was not reported. I mean, that foreign journalists might have different perspectives or might find different things interesting or... it's very possible, but as a generalization, it's a little bit difficult for me to respond to that.
Did you want to get any more specific with that, Ronnie?
Well, there were times when, you know, they were talking about the radiation and how high it was, and, you know, or even the iodine pills or, you know, food rations and everything else, and her parents didn't know anything of it, and they were watching the news, And again, it was just like, you know, the American media was covering it and saying it like it was. And it wasn't like as if it wasn't true or not. It was just that the Japanese, I believe the Japanese news agency are just very careful about what they say. So there's no mass hysteria.
Ronnie, thank you. Go ahead, Ian.
Can I comment on that?
Yes.
I think that's very possible, and that the Japanese media and not only the media, but government spokesmen and spokesmen for the nuclear power company are probably cagier because they are afraid of consequences. They don't want to panic and so on, whereas Western media quoting nuclear experts in the United States and other places would be less constrained in that sense.
Ian Buruma, my guest on WNYC, who was educated partially in Japan, has lived there at various times over the years, contributed to the New York Review of Books, and teaches at Bard College, as we talk about cultural portrayals of the Japanese people, especially in the U.S. media since the earthquake. And I want to play another clip. This one is from a report by NPR's John Burnett, filed from Japan, an example of maybe seeing things through a certain set of eyes. This is about a minute long.
We have some reports, confirmed reports, that some money or the bicycles or they're stolen from the house or the shops. And we confirmed it's not washed away by tsunami, but somebody else did it. But the number is less than 10 so far.
So that's fewer than 10 reports in a city that was home to 40,000 people. While we're interviewing him, a woman walks into the police station holding a soggy wallet. It has the equivalent of $150 in it. I ask a policewoman if this is common.
Actually, we get a lot because lots of wallets are washed away, so lots of them are found.
We want to find out if local people have heard about burglaries after the tsunami. I still remember some of the Katrina survivors in New Orleans who hauled off liquor bottles, Nike sneakers, and flat-screen TVs.
So John Burnett from NPR and Ian Buruma, he makes the leap right there quite explicitly from the lack of looting and return of wallets lost in Japan to people who hauled off liquor bottles, Nike sneakers, and flat-screen TVs after Katrina.
Yes, I think the nature of criminality tells you quite a bit about the nature of society, and that different societies tend to have different forms of crime. Japan has a lot of crime, but much of it tends to be organized, the famous Yakuza gangs, crime syndicates, a lot of it's white-collar, and then there's quite a lot of sexual misbehavior, harassment, and that sort of thing. What you'll find much less of are things like muggings, looting, individual cases of misbehavior. It exists, but it's much less, I would say, than perhaps in a more individualistic society like the United States.
And I think Michael in Manhattan wants to make a related point with respect to Haiti. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Ryan.
Go ahead.
Ryan, I think it would be unfair when I'm hearing the contrast being made regarding people from Haiti. Number one, if you remember, when this whole earthquake happened, the first couple of days, you had poor Haitians trying to help other people bury under those rubble. They were cutting their limbs with handmade tools to get them out. So the looting and everything else only happened after a few days of having not received any help from outside. And furthermore, the society in Japan is different from Haiti. In Haiti, you have 10 million people living in the country that, with only 6,000 policemen. Think about this ratio. But yet, you don't hear gang warfare and rapes and killing happening left and right like that. I mean, this is something that every time I hear it, I'm completely baffled by the reason for it. Haitians are a lot more civilized than they've been given credit for.
Michael, thank you. And that's an important point. And we could understand, Ian, why it rankles Michael and any number of Haitians, not to mention New Orleanians. I mean, maybe no looting has more to do with poverty rates and, as he says, amount of aid coming in and presence of a police force in each respective place than a culturally specific trait.
I think that's correct. I entirely take that point. And I think also in Haiti and possibly in New Orleans, there was also the matter of a large number of people who were probably resentful of being left in the lurch, of not being helped, of being bereft. Perhaps people who'd felt that in many ways even before these disasters struck, whereas Japanese society is in that sense. There's far more equality and less, I think, class resentment, less feeling or ethnic racial resentment. Therefore, people are less likely to be violent in that particular way.
Before you go, Nicholas Kristof, the op-ed columnist and former Tokyo bureau chief for the New York Times, wrote in a column entitled "The Japanese Could Teach Us a Thing or Two." He basically praised the Japanese for being less individualistic and more steadfast in their resolve to keep society functioning well. But in the section in which he outlines the downsides of Japanese culture, he writes, "Granted, Japan's ethic of uncomplaining perseverance, gaman in Japanese, may also explain why the country settles for third-rate leaders." What do you think about that? Do Japanese people think their leaders are failing them, but settle for third-rate leaders, as he put it?
Well, I don't entirely disagree with that analysis. I think there are great problems with Japanese government, but they're not so much because people put up with third-rate politicians. It's a systemic problem, and that's certainly since the war, real power has been exercised not by elected politicians but by bureaucrats in a very murky system in which politicians often get the blame for things over which they had very little authority. And it's happening again. This government, which I think is doing its best, is getting blamed for things partly because the chain of command is so murky, for which they are not really responsible. They should be responsible. That's one of the reasons that this government, which was voted in only a few years ago, is trying to change the system, and many Japanese support them in that.
Ian Baruma from Bard College and the New York Review of Books, thank you for coming on with us. A fascinating conversation.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A short time ago, House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan secured a place in history. Whether it will be a headline or a footnote remains to be seen, but the Wisconsin Republican has proposed sweeping changes to Medicare and Medicaid, the third rails or among the third rails of American politics. We will play clips from that news conference and get analysis in about 20 minutes. But first, the filmmaker Ken Burns on Prohibition's echoes in today's politics and the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. Ken Burns, then we'll talk about Paul Ryan. Stay with us on The Brian Lehrer Show here on WNYC.